Hi, friends. Welcome to the By Faith podcast. I'm your host, Christine Hoover, and I'm so glad you're here. Each week this season, I'm talking with a guest about how they are pursuing devotion to God by fighting sin and learning to delight in Him. Through their stories, we are learning how we too can fight for wholehearted allegiance to King Jesus. I hope you've enjoyed this season as much as I have. If you've been helped or encouraged in any way, would you head over to iTunes and leave a rating or a review? That helps people find the podcast, but another great way for people to find the podcast is just by you sharing it with one or two friends. I love making this podcast for you, and I love to hear when new listeners jump on board. So thank you. This episode was sponsored by The Good Book Company, publishers of Born Again This Way. In this powerful and personal book, Rachel Gilson describes her own unexpected journey of coming out and then coming to faith and what came next. As she does so, she addresses many of the questions that Christians living with same-sex attraction are wrestling with, and she argues that it really is possible to live a life that's both faithful and fulfilling. Pick up a copy at thegoodbook.com or wherever good books are sold. This episode was also sponsored by B&H Publishers, publisher of Fight for Love. Is your husband addicted to porn? Do you feel like you can't keep fighting this battle? Like you've tried to fix yourself, to fix the situation, and to fix your spouse to no avail? And if not your family, do you know someone dealing with this? Rosie McKinney has been there. She has felt the pain and confusion, and she fought through it. In Fight for Love, Rosie shares the principles she uses as she coaches women dealing with this issue in churches all over the country, and she hopes it will be freeing, encouraging, and empowering for you. Fight for Love by Rosie McKinney is available wherever books are sold. I'm thrilled to get to share today's episode of By Faith with you. My guest today is Courtney Reisick. Courtney is someone I've long admired. She is a Bible teacher, a wife, and mom of four boys. In our conversation today, Courtney shares about some trauma she endured in giving birth to her fourth baby and how that physical trauma led to physiological anxiety and spiritual fear. She tells us how she navigated that time, what helped her navigate through to healing, and finally what she'd say specifically to moms about fear or regret related to childbirth or our children in general. Even if you're not a mom, you will relate so much to Courtney's story of panic and fear, and you'll learn from her what she now knows about God, having come through it to the other side. Here, friends, is my conversation with Courtney Reisick. Thanks, Courtney, for joining me on my podcast.
Thanks for having me.
It's kind of fun because we've met before, but I think we've always been around other people, and so yes. I've never really gotten to sit down with you and really yeah. talk to you. So this is kind of fun. I get to hear more of your story.
I know. And everyone gets to listen in.
Yeah. That's what's fun about doing this is like, I just get to have a conversation and then I love it so much. And so yes. I get excited to share it with other people and other people get to listen in.
Yeah. No, I like that. That's why I enjoy listening to podcasts. So yeah.
What are you listening to? What are your favorites?
Well, I really like the Knowing Faith podcast. Yeah. I feel like a lot of people like Knowing Faith, but I like your podcast. I listen to your podcast. I do.
Thanks.
I do. And I listen to United We Pray podcast. I don't know if you're familiar with that
yeah,
one.
Yeah, Trillia. Newer.
Yeah, Trillia was on it and Isaac Adams. And then I listen to Jamie Ivey.
Oh, yeah. I like Jamie too.
I always learn about new stuff like that I never like even heard about before. So, and new people.
It's hard to keep up with all of them. And after a while, yeah. I get so overwhelmed that I just have a few that I keep up with regularly. Yeah. And yeah.
Yeah. I know I do. I like news and politics, and so I listen to that too.
Like what kind of stuff? Like the Daily, or
I listen to the Daily, and I listen to NPR, yeah. politics podcast, and I listen to the Pop Culture Happy Hour because that's really fun. So
I've never heard of that.
It's another NPR when they talk about like movies and shows. I mean, sometimes there are shows I probably would never watch or a movie I wouldn't watch, but sometimes they're about like movies that I'm interested in or shows I'm interested in.
Yeah.
It's just lighthearted. So
how do you keep up with all that? Cause you
well, I don't.
Okay.
I don't. I get overwhelmed. So I kind of like you, like sometimes I'll have like a stretch where I could maybe I have like more cleaning I need to do at home and then I'll listen to more. And then I'll go through this like phase where I don't have any time to listen to them. And they keep like coming into my feed and I'm like, I'm so overwhelmed. So I just delete all of them. So
that's how I do it. I get so overwhelmed sometimes yeah. and I just can't do it anymore.
but yeah. I'll eventually jump back in. I love long drives when I actually get to do them. If
I do, yeah.
I don't have a kid and kids yeah. in the car, I can listen to podcasts, which I love.
Yes. If I travel for speaking, I'll listen to podcasts when I'm like walking to the airport. And my younger two kids go to preschool 2 mornings a week. And so I get to listen to more podcasts then because yeah. I go for a run or I like do extra stuff around the house. So
yeah. Well, yeah. introduce yourself and your family. You've mentioned kids and all
yeah,
that.
I'm Courtney.
Yeah. And, oh yeah. Hey, Courtney.
Hi. I have 4 little boys and they range from ages, I have twins who are 6. They're almost 7 and a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old. So we're about to be in the stage of the time of the year where everyone's about to turn over to a new age in the next like 4 or 5 months. So right now they're 6, 6, 4, and 2. So,
and all boys,
all boys. Yeah. It's really crazy. Yeah. A lot of energy.
Yes.
I live in Little Rock, Arkansas. I'm married to Daniel. We've married for a little over 10 years and we met at Southern Seminary. We were seminary students. And then, he graduated. We moved here to help plant a church in Little Rock. We were a part of that for 8 years and recently transitioned, elsewhere. And then I didn't finish seminary. I always like to say this because it's new, but I didn't finish seminary because we couldn't afford it. But I just recently re-enrolled in seminary Yay. in August. So I take one class at a time.
What are you studying?
I am just doing a Master of Arts in Christian Education. Okay. So I would like to hopefully do a Doctor of Education after, but it's going to take me a really long time. So,
yeah. Well, why did you decide to go back?
Well, Daniel actually is kind of the one behind that. About 3 or 4 years ago, we were talking with a woman who was in seminary. She was getting her PhD and she had kids who were a little older than mine. And she was like, you should go back and finish someday. And I was like, at the time I thought, I don't really need to go back and finish because I was doing what I had wanted to do. Like I wanted to write, I wanted to teach the Bible. And so I thought, well, I'm doing it. So, and then Daniel was sitting right next to me and he said, I think that'd be good when she has a little more time, when the kids are a little older, maybe she could do it. And so I just kind of had kept, I was like, oh, I guess I didn't know that was on the table. So so I just kept talking about it over time. And then I realized that the classes I had taken were going to start expiring because it had been so long.
Yeah.
And so we were like, I mean, I had put about 30 credits into an MDiv, which what I was doing. And it just, 30 credits is a lot of work. It was
yes,
like
it 2.5 years
of work.
Yeah. And
so we were like, okay, we can try one class at a time. And if it just doesn't work, then we'll just like pull back and try it again another semester. I kind of like we could have put a plan in place of like, what do I want to do long term? What degree would work long term for us? I would love to do the languages, but the languages are a ton of work.
Yeah.
And there are so many resources out there that I can use to not have to do the languages.
Yeah.
And neither of us feel like our family can sustain like me doing the languages because it's an everyday thing. Like you have to be able to do that work every single day or there's no point.
Yeah.
So we're like a Master of Arts would be good. And then doing a Doctor of Education, focusing more like on equipping and training.
Women. Yeah. What do you want to do long term? You said
training women to like study and teach the Bible within a local church context. So many women can't go to seminary.
Yeah.
But they can learn in their local church. And so I would like to research of how are other Southern Baptist churches doing this or how are they not doing it? And then implement those things for women in the church who
yes.
Want to be literate in the Bible, but don't have the resources at their disposal.
Yes. That's what I love about what Jen Wilkin is doing with yes. her team at the Village. Yeah. I've been so inspired by her and actually I got to pick her brain last year and just bringing some of those ideas back to our church and trying to implement that. I love that that's where it seems like churches are moving is toward
right.
where, how can we do this in yes. our local church?
Right.
Training and equipping. So I love that that's your heart.
Yeah.
And you've already been writing. I mean, you have several books under your belt. You have a new one coming out.
Yeah.
So you're already doing it. Just getting some training. Yeah.
And now that I've been in seminary, so I took one class. They have 8-week blocks for online classes. And so I did the first 8 weeks and took the second week, 8 weeks off. And I'm in another class right now. And I have been so encouraged and reminded of how much I don't know. which has been really good because I think I thought, oh, well, I teach, so this is just going to be a formality, which is totally pride. I know that, but I'll just throw it out there that I was totally arrogant going into it. I was completely humbled, but then also so encouraged by how much I didn't know and just really enjoyed the learning process. And yeah. So it makes me really excited going forward to just learn more.
Yeah. That's great. So, that's a lot on your plate with 2 6-year-olds, a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, but I'm happy for you and excited for you.
It's probably too much. I watch lectures at night and I would read anyways. So my reading is just dictated by schoolwork right now.
Yeah. Well, let's jump into your story because this is what I really, you know, if I could have gotten you alone in the times I've met you, I would have asked you about this.
Yeah.
I've read some of your story online. I was really, 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 really moved and really sticks in my head when you wrote about mental health on the internet, put it out on the internet. So I would love to hear the listeners to hear that story. And I want to hear that story of what happened to you when your youngest son was born. Can you take us back to those days and tell us what happened?
My struggle with mental health probably even goes back to when the twins were born, in large part because I probably had postpartum depression after the twins and after Seth, my third son. I just didn't realize it because every time I would Google it, it would say like, you can't get out of bed or all these things. And I'm like, well, I have to get out of bed. I don't really have a choice. So like, clearly I don't have that.
Right.
And so, which I think a lot of women feel that way. And then after Seth, I realized a lot of my insomnia issues were owing to postpartum depression and anxiety. And so I was briefly on medication just to help me sleep for a while, that to kind of get me into a better pattern and rhythm of sleep.
Can I stop you right there and say,
yeah.
So when you look back at when your twins were born, what were the things that were happening that you didn't know was postpartum depression?
I think really on edge, just like an overwhelming sadness that just never, ever went away. I was just an overwhelming sadness. Like I think sometimes like you have like the baby blues in those first 2 weeks after where your hormones are kind of all out of whack. And then this feeling kind of like out of control. I couldn't control how I felt. I had these emotional outbursts that were just unable to be like reined in. And I think in conservative Christian circles, we like to say, well, that's like a lack of the Holy Spirit or lack of self-control or whatever. And maybe, but maybe it's like your brain is a little bit broken after you had a baby. And if all those hormones are creating life, then they're a little bit out of whack after you have a baby. We acknowledge the wonder of what your body can do to create a baby, but we don't acknowledge the brokenness of the world that baby's now out of your body. And our twins were 8 weeks premature. So they were in the NICU for a long time. So my entry into motherhood was fairly traumatic to begin with. And so I say all that because I feel like that in hindsight, I know now that a lot of how I handled Ben's birth and processed that and responded to that was because I had all these other things were stacking on. So my entire birth experience from we had a miscarriage before the twins and it took us 2 more years to get pregnant and we had all this treatment. So we had this long stretch of like 5 years, 6 years of really, really hard, scary things regarding pregnancy.
Yeah.
So when I got pregnant with Ben, we were fairly certain 4 was enough for us. I mean, because 4 is a lot of kids, but I thought I was miscarrying him in the first trimester. And I've had 2 miscarriages. So I was fairly certain I knew what a miscarriage was. And I was 6 weeks pregnant and I was like, I know this is what it is. And we went to go have an ultrasound. And I had friends who were like, I'm praying for a heartbeat. And I was like, I'm glad you're praying for a heartbeat because I have no faith to pray for a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. Like the baby's just not going to be there. And he's alive, he's here. So he was there. Like we were in complete shock that there was a beating heart when we had the ultrasound. And it was that I had a bleed in my uterus, which was part of like the placenta forming. And they're like, this is a normal thing that happens the first trimester. You'll bleed the whole first trimester, but you're going to be fine. He'll be fine. Well, we didn't know it was a he. The baby will be fine. So once we got to the first trimester, I had never really had major issues after the first trimester. So I kind of, even after, especially after like 20 weeks, I thought we're fine. Like I could like coast through, this is our last pregnancy. I scheduled my C-section and I was like, this is going to be like this like wonderful resolution to all these hard pregnancies and difficulties that God is giving me everything I ever wanted in it being perfect. My parents were going to be there for the birth. They were going to come meet him after he was born. It was going to be perfect. and I was 32 weeks pregnant, and I got rear-ended, with like minor, like they barely bumped the car. But a formality is you have to go to the hospital if you get rear-ended when you're pregnant. So
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, I thought you just had to call the doctor. So I called and they're like, no, you have to go get checked out, labor and delivery. And I was like, really? I have all my groceries in the car. Like I was just kind of annoyed. I got to find childcare for my kids. Daniel's got to get off work. I mean, it's just annoying. So we thought we were going to be there for 2 hours and come home. So we get there and they did labs like they're supposed to. And the labs came back with like what they call a positive fetal trauma bleed. And they're like, that is so weird, because you actually weren't in a legitimate car accident. Like there was no damage to your car. It was just a bump. And they said, we have to stay overnight because they have to check it again in the morning. So they did that and it was fine in the morning. And they're like, it's maybe a fluke, but if you have pain in a week, over the next week, come back. So I went home, I spoke at a women's retreat that weekend. And all throughout that weekend, the following weekend, I had this like weird pain. And it just kept getting worse. And I thought, oh, maybe I'm just uncomfortable. And then I went home. And then throughout the night, it just kept getting worse. And then by like middle of the night, it was like unbearable. And my uterus was like rock hard. So I thought, oh, this is like, yeah, like this is not good. And I couldn't walk. So I called. They said, you need to come to the hospital right away. So we went to the hospital. Even then we thought, maybe we'll be home by the afternoon. Like we didn't know. And, they thought it was appendicitis, something. And then by middle of the day, everything started going really south. Like I had started having contractions. Ben's heart rate started dropping with every contraction. Some of it's kind of foggy because I was in so much pain, like I don't remember a whole lot of it. But what became apparent is that I was having a placenta abruption. And so they weren't certain if it was, they knew it wasn't a full abruption because his heart was still beating, but they weren't certain how, and they were trying to, do we deliver, do we not deliver? If we deliver him at 33 weeks, we run the risk of him not being okay. If we wait, we run the risk of both of them not being okay.
So there was your placenta was coming off
of my uterus.
Wow.
So, and all of that goes back to that first trimester of, in hindsight, that was just I had a complication of a placenta complication, and the rear-ended made me go to the hospital, which made the fetal trauma bleed people aware of it. That trauma bleed was just because I was having an abruption that I couldn't feel yet. And so all of that was just the Lord made us aware to go in, because we would have just delayed a little bit. You know, we would have been like, maybe we shouldn't go. So all of that, we left our kids in the middle of the night. They were 4 and 2. And initially we thought maybe we would get to go home, but then it became really apparent that we weren't going anywhere. And I wasn't allowed to leave my room. For a while, I wasn't allowed to get out of the bed except to go to the bathroom. I was on continuous monitoring to make sure that at any point they were concerned that the placenta would completely detach. And if that happened, they had like 5 minutes to save Ben and 10 minutes to save me. And that was what we were aware of at all times, is that if it goes south at any point, we have to get you to the OR immediately.
You are in your room attached to a monitor at all times, anticipating the alarms going.
Yes.
For how long were you in the hospital?
3 weeks.
So for 3 weeks, that's how you mentally had to live, was any minute I could be rushed and I could lose my life. I could lose my baby's life.
Yeah.
That's and scary.
And I think we had ups and downs. There are times where everything would stabilize and like they would be like, well, maybe you might make it to 36 weeks, you might make it to this time. Like, so we had like down, like times where we'd come down the roller coaster and things would be a little bit stable and we could maybe exhale a little bit. But I mean, then we would have things happen where his heart rate would drop and we'd have to go back on monitoring and we'd go back up again and I wouldn't be able to eat for a couple hours and they'd say you might go into the OR. And I mean, there are all these types of things constantly. And we couldn't care for our boys because, like, Daniel couldn't leave the hospital because if he left the hospital, I might go into the OR and he'd miss everything. And so our church cared for the boys round the clock for about 10 days until my mom could get there. And then it just became apparent that it was too hard for my mom to do all by herself. And so my dad came and got them all and took them to Florida, where they were living at the time. and that was the worst like day. That was probably our worst day because we felt like, what if they go, they're leaving and like, what if they don't come home to me, or what if they don't come home to a baby brother, or, and they were just so confused and so scared. Like they didn't understand. Our 2-year-old had just started really talking and no one understood him. And so he was just like terrified. Oh. It was just a really jarring time for our entire family. And then at 36 weeks, like to the day, so 3 weeks to the day of when I got there, his heart rate dropped too low. And it came back up, but it dropped too low. And so they said, this is, you have to have him. And I was like when? They're like right now. So, and Daniel wasn't there. He had left to go like do something. Everything had been kind of stable. And so he's like, I'll go home for a minute. I'll come right back. So I called him and he was like, this is my worst nightmare. Like, this is what I didn't want to happen. And so he was like trying to get back. And he got back in time. And, but he was born, I mean, he was born breathing and he was born screaming. Hmm. But he had to be in the NICU for a week.
Can you tell us about those 3 weeks in the hospital, the amount of, I'm just imagining the anxiety. It's yes. like your adrenaline is high the whole time. Yes. At least I'm imagining it to be like
oh,
that.
For sure. For
can
sure.
Can you tell us your emotional state?
Yes. So I don't think I realized how my adrenaline was high like that until we came home. So, because I think when you're in it, like you have no idea what it's physically doing to your body. It was just almost like I was in the state of protection. So like I barely cried when I was there. Like I cried, a few times, but it was, I mean, for the most part, I was just like strong. And I think it was, maybe it was just subconsciously, like I was like, I gotta be strong. So I wasn't letting myself really come down from the like adrenaline. One thing, I mean, my new book is on the Psalms in large part because that was the only thing I could read. I used to think that hospital bed rest would be like a little vacation before your baby comes. And it's not true at all. Like, no. And I think, and I knew people who would say things like that. Now, and when I went through it, I was like, there's anything but that. Like we tried doing stuff like playing games or even watching a movie. Like I just couldn't do anything. I could not focus on anything, but for some reason, and I think it's because in God's kindness, he's given us language for all kinds of seasons of life. The Psalms were such a balm to me because the Psalms are filled with life and death situations, and they're filled with questions and like raw emotions, and that I kind of was living there. And so in the Psalms, I just found friends. Like I found people who they got me, they got the fears that I had. And so that's, I mean, I probably read them 2 or 3 times through, and occasionally would just like journal about them or like write about what, cause I write just to process. And then honestly it feels so unproductive, but some days I would just like lay there and just like look out the window. Thankfully I had a good window room. So I could like look out, well, it was a parking lot, but I could see like, I could see like the trees. And I still remember every day when the sun would set, I would have this hopefulness and this angst of like hopefulness of like, I lived another day. Like we did it another day. And knowing that, okay, we can make it another day. We can make it another day. And the Lord was gracious and he brought we had friends come visit and we loved our nurses. When they were wheeling me to the OR, I was like crying, like thanking all of them. As they're wheeling me to the OR, I was like, thank you so much for like everything you've done. And like one of the nurses, like she didn't have to do this, but the only time I completely had a panic attack was right before he was born. And so some of it was the medication they gave you before C-section. In the moments before, I was freaking out, and she had the other nurse cover the floor. In the high-risk unit, crazy things always happen. The day he was born was kind of a crazy day. A lot of babies were being born that day in stressful situations. So it was a lot of work for him to cover the floor for her, but she came. I turned, and she came and was holding my hand. Her only job was to hold my hand. So, and like, I just cry thinking about her. She's amazing. Like, but she just held my hand, and this was before Daniel could get in there. She was like, it's going to be okay. And then she took pictures of him and she followed him to the NICU because she could, because she was working. She's a nurse. Like she could follow him. And she followed him everywhere and came back and gave it, because you don't get to see your baby for a long time. And so she gave us like reports. So it was there was just a lot of like ups and downs, and the feelings that I had intensified when I went home.
Yeah. Can before we talk about when you go home, is there a psalm that stands out to you when you think about those weeks in the hospital? What psalm stands out to you, or what even phrase or characteristic of God?
Yeah, I think it's two psalms in particular. So in I think either Psalm 66 or Psalm 116, where the psalmist says, I believe that I shall look upon the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. I remember praying that, knowing, I know ultimately I will look upon the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living, right? I'm going to be resurrected on the last day. But I remember praying, like, I want to look upon the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living right now, and just asking the Lord to let me see his goodness no matter the outcome. And then begging him for the outcome that I wanted, you know, like, I don't think it's wrong to ask for your baby to live or your children to have a mother, or those are good things to ask for. And so that was just a constant. Another one is Psalm 46, one, the Lord is a refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. And that one was so near, because so comforting, because he's a very present help. Like, he's not just near or present, like very present. He is always present. And in Psalm 46, it's, therefore we will not fear though the earth gives way, though the mountains be thrown into the heart of the seas. I mean, that is like, mountains don't get thrown into the heart of the seas. That's the most terrifying thing you can imagine, because it's so out of your control. It felt like our world was caving in. It felt like we were completely out of control. And the Lord was so kind. Throughout all of it, I can honestly say the Lord was so kind to allow us to know his presence and to know his comfort. And it wasn't our first time in the hospital. I mean, we've had kids in the hospital before, and it wasn't our first time in difficulty like that. But we were so helped by seeing the Lord's presence there in a way even that maybe we hadn't seen before. And we had seen the fruit of the pouring the deposits of God's word into our lives. Mm-hmm. And I know in particular, like, I've spent seasons when the twins were born, where I didn't read the Bible and where I didn't care about those things. And I was a bitter and frustrated woman. And I saw the fruit in our hospital stay this time, where I feel like the Lord gave me a second chance to see the fruit of being in God's word. So
that's great. Well, yeah. Take us to the days when you got home, because it didn't end with Ben's birth.
Yeah.
It really kind of began when you got home.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that was probably the most shocking to me, is I thought we were going to come home and we had a success story. We lived. Yeah. We had a NICU stay, but besides that, everything was fine. And I wanted to go back to the hospital. I couldn't sleep. I didn't want anyone to touch him. I didn't want anyone to hold him. I was just so afraid of everything. And what the Lord put people in my life who had walked through similar situations very early on, who just straight up asked, how are you doing emotionally? Or are you afraid all the time? For me, it was hard to go back to real life, because real life felt really scary. And I was like, yes, that's how I feel. Like, I was caught off guard by it, because I thought you walk out of that situation, all you want to do is leave the hospital. And then when you're out of the hospital, you're like, why do I want to go back there? And it's because when you walk through trauma, you don't want the trauma, but for the trauma in that chaotic lack of control, you somehow have some safety net, I guess, or you at least kind of, I don't even know how to explain it, because I'm not a practitioner, but the world felt really unsafe. And the world is unsafe. The world has always been unsafe. And I knew that in my head, but I experienced it in my body and then with my children. And I didn't know how to just go back and live in the world knowing that any of us could die at any moment. And we actually don't know when that's coming, and it can happen in an instant with no warning. And I didn't like that world. And
was it a fear for of you dying, or it was a fear of you were very fearful for your children?
Oh, it was both.
Both.
Yeah. I didn't want them to leave me, but I was also so incredibly overwhelmed by having four children that I needed them to leave me sometimes so that I could just like have some reprieve. So, and yeah, I was completely and afraid of what is the next thing around the corner. In a lot of ways, I felt like I couldn't trust God's character. I felt like God was just always waiting to bring another thing to us, and he couldn't be trusted. He's going to kick us when we're down. He's just going to take. And we had other things happen in our family that just made things difficult in the months and year after that, just kind of compounded it.
Would you describe it as kind of the adrenaline still being high? Like, your body is just tight and anxious and feeling it physiologically?
Yes.
So would you characterize it now, looking back, this was a physical thing?
Yes.
But it led to spiritual.
Yeah. Like thankfully my OBGYN is a believer. And so when he had me come back at 6 weeks, he could tell I was really not okay. So he's like, let's have you come back in like 4 weeks and let's just talk and see how you're doing. And I came back and we were talking and he said, there's people in Christian circles who will say like everything's spiritual or everything's physical. Oh. And he said, I think in your case, it's both. And I told him, I said, I know like I have to wrestle with the theological implications of what happened. Like, I know that. Like, I know that I thought I knew all these things about God's sovereignty and life and death and all that kind of stuff. And then I had to live it. And then it's all jarring. But I had this other stuff I just couldn't live with normal. And I think now that I'm pretty far removed from it, I think like you were talking about with the adrenaline, is when the adrenaline comes down, that's when you process it. So you're not processing anything in the moment.
Yeah.
Because you're just living it and you're just trying to survive it. And then when the adrenaline comes down, you have to really wrestle with what happened. And that's what, and I think for me, what was hard is I had 4 really, really small children. There was not a lot of time to really process what happened. I had to make time. Like I was in counseling and things like that to try to really make time to hash out what happened and how do I cope with these unexpected things that happen in life that push me back to the hospital and push me back to what happened to where I can't recover emotionally.
Were you thinking, so you just said, what you just said makes me think, or wonder, were you thinking about it all the time? Your mind and your body were taking you back to how you felt in the hospital, that you couldn't move forward in life because you were kind of almost like a stuck feeling. Is that how you describe it?
Yes. Like, and stuck in this fear of that I have no footing underneath me.
I see.
And what's so crazy is I really felt like I had dealt with all of that prior to all this happening, because it's not like we had like a cakewalk getting to having Ben. One of my friends, he's a psychologist who works with veterans. And he was saying, he's like, I don't think Ben is in isolation. He said, I think it was just like this whole, like 6 years of everything just kind of, and Ben's situation was just the thing that just broke it all. In spiritual terms, I think the Lord, I like to have everything in like perfect order. And I like to feel like I can control it to some capacity, which I think a lot of people do.
Don't we all? Yeah.
Yeah. So I think God continues to put situations in my path that force me to not be able to control it. It was a really eye-opening experience that I really thought I could control certain things. And I thought I had really worked through my lack of control in birth.
So where are you now? But how did you move through that process of healing? I'd love to hear, what are some of the things that you did to address how you were feeling?
Yeah.
And also, how have you come to accept the reality that you aren't in control? Because we aren't, but it's these situations that teach you that. So how have you come to embrace that?
There's a few things that helped me kind of move past it. One is, I think, time. I remember last Christmas going through the Christmas season and telling my husband, you know, like, I really feel like I have experienced some healing. Like, I remember last Christmas just feeling like really in the depths and like low, and like I just couldn't function. And I don't have that fear. I walked through last Christmas without that fear. So that was helpful. And just time had healed some of those things. The other thing that was really helpful for me is I was in counseling for about 6 months. And honestly, the primary thing that we did is we walked through everything that happened. And then we walked through, repeatedly walked through what happened. And we repeatedly walked through, like, how do you feel when this happens? And why do you feel that way? And kind of getting me to step outside of it to see, yes, you cannot control that. You can't. But you have to look and see how the Lord brought you through that. And you think even in terms of the whole Old Testament is about Israel remembering that God brought them through the valley of the shadow of death. And I can get so bogged down on the valley of the shadow of death that I forget that God is the one who's delivering me from it. And so it was helpful just to have tools at my disposal and just to have someone let me to process it and talk through it. I can remember what God has done. I can remember the situation and not see it only for my lack of control, but see it for how God was present and was delivering me in it. And then I think the other thing that has been really helpful is acknowledging that we live in a broken world. I think for American women especially, we have a very idealized understanding of birth. And so my experience is not unique when I stand next to my sisters all throughout the world, because most women all throughout the world face death and birth. And historically, most women have faced death and birth. That's a reality of just living in a post-Genesis 3 world. And so when I've seen myself as a part of this more global, like historical sisterhood of women who have had to live with that reality, it's been helpful to see that I'm just another person living in a broken body. And I think a lot of women feel that way. Like they feel the sorrow of living in a broken body, but we think we can control so much about birth in America. And we have a lot of opinions about birth in America. And I think women are set up to fail, and they have so much difficulty processing what happened instead of recognizing that your body was meant to do this, of course, but it was also like people get cancer. Like you're not gonna, you know, people get diabetes, people get all kinds of things because we live in a broken world. And so birth, like everything else, is just affected by that. And I have got to come to terms with the fact that I live in a broken world. So that's like my constant refrain is everything feels angsty because I live in a broken world.
Yeah. So what do you say, Courtney, to women in your church who maybe they're pregnant with their first baby, or some, as you're, even before you said that, I was thinking this is such a fear for women related to childbirth.
Oh yeah.
Kids, pregnancy, infertility, mm-hmm. all those things that you just mentioned. And so what do you say to women, I'm thinking of young women, even in my church, who are having their first baby or they're raising their first child. What do you say to them to help them to understand what you now know?
Yeah. I mean, this is like something that I feel really passionate about, primarily because I see so many women like crushed under the weight of the expectations. It's hard because you don't want to be at like the baby shower and be like, hold your birth plan loosely, you know, but you kind of want to say yeah. that, you know, like birth is a means to an end. I mean, it's just, we've put so much stock in, like, I have no pictures of myself holding a baby when they're born, like none. Like I have no pictures of family pictures in a hospital. Like I don't have any of those things. And so I can either be completely devastated by that fact, or I can be like, I have four kids that I'm called to raise. Like, I mean, birth is such a small part of what it means to be a mother. And I think so many women put, because it's something we feel like we have control over, especially in the West. I want so badly when I talk to women is to just hold that plan so loosely and recognize that if it doesn't go well, if it doesn't go how you expected it to go, that's really okay. And it's just part of living in a broken world where everything is going to be hard, but you have a baby, you know, like you got the baby at the end, you know, like, and so I would, for that woman who's pregnant and who does have the baby at the end, I would want to encourage her to remember it's a means to an end. It's not, it's just the avenue to get the baby out, like, you know, so, but I also think for the woman who's like a mother or the woman who wants to be a mother, both of those women, so the woman who's a mother and feels kind of like it's not everything it was cracked up to be, or the woman who desperately wants to be a mother and isn't, both of those women feel the angst of the lack of fulfillment that this is not supposed, it's not intended to make us feel it's everything it was meant to be. And so I would want both those women to understand the identity that comes with being a daughter of Christ and not necessarily in what like your body can do or whether what you, your role as a mother can be. Because we have so much discretionary time to think about these things in ways that women just didn't have before, I think we can pontificate about them and have opinions about them. And and I think that just causes a lot more anxiety. And I know for myself it does. I mean, I'm like, well, I haven't done an Advent craft yet. You know, I mean, things like that, you know, like we have just so much time and so much resources at our disposal that the thing that's a means to an end of discipling your children and raising them in the fear and admonition of the Lord, that's the whole reason you have kids.
Yeah.
gets clouded by all these other things.
Right. Because we can compare through social media. Oh, we sure, can yeah. see what everyone else is doing.
Yeah.
All the options of what
we're doing. Oh, I know. Doing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so challenging. And so I appreciate you speaking to that. And I wonder, just in closing, are there truths that, you know, from Psalms especially, that you still go back to mm-hmm. in your daily life related to control or fear?
Psalm 46:1 is like one I go to all the time. God is a very present help. Two Psalms in particular that I've been really meditating on a lot more. Psalm 77 talks about, when I remember God, I moan, which is kind of shocking to be in the Bible. You know, like when you think about God, you're not supposed to moan in anguish. Like you're supposed to be like, have warm, fuzzy feelings about him. Mm-hmm. And I find that verse so comforting for someone who's prone to depression, that sometimes when I remember God, I do moan. I do feel like he's not here and he's forgotten me, that he is not a very present help. And I find it incredibly comforting that God doesn't like whitewash those emotions. Yeah. And he puts them in there for his brokenhearted people to know that sometimes when we remember him, we do moan. And it doesn't mean that we're denying him. If anything, it means that we are acknowledging that he's the one who's sovereign over all things. And if he's sovereign over all things, then he's put me here and I don't like where he has put me, you mm-hmm. know? And so.
And he's the one we can moan to.
Yes.
About can, those circumstances.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. He can bear the weight of that. And then Psalm 89, it's really long, but it talks in the middle kind of about, well, are you going to forget all these things you've promised to me? Like those have been really comforting. And God hasn't promised to answer all my prayers in the way I want him to. But when I feel really distant from the Lord and when I'm struggling with depression, and even the most basic things like delighting in the law of the Lord, which are things I should do, are not there. I do pray that prayer of delighting in the Lord is something I should do, and I don't. So I go back to those angsty ones a lot because I tend to be more angsty.
You are a writer after all.
I know. So,
well, we haven't even talked about that. You mentioned it earlier, but we needed to talk about it, that you wrote a book about this, about emotion and the Psalms. It's called Teach Me to Feel. Worshiping through the Psalms in every season of life. And you really do a great job of, I love that it's kind of a tool, a resource that you can jump into from any point of the book, mm-hmm. depending upon what you're experiencing, what mm-hmm. you're feeling. You take a Psalm and walk our emotion through that Psalm mm-hmm. and bringing us to the truth of who God is. And I love that. I think it's going to be a great resource for people. So maybe tell us, why did you write it out of your experience? You wanted other people to be able to learn what you had learned, or why did you write it?
Yeah. So the Psalms were really helpful to me in the hospital. And then in the months after, both in my crying out to the Lord for deliverance. And then also in my, when the Lord did deliver us, the Psalms are filled with a lot of Psalms of thanksgiving that are pertaining to a specific circumstance. And so I found such just kinship in the Psalms. And then as I have faced other things since then, I've just seen that the Psalms speak to all of life. I mean, in Psalm 1 and Psalm 2 tells us kind of how the world is supposed to be. Meditating on the law of the Lord will lead to a blessed life, a life of flourishing, and then trusting in the promised coming King, who is Jesus, who's going to rule and reign over all things. But we live in the kind of the messy middle of Psalm 3 through Psalm 144, where you have really good days and really bad days. And my emotions are different than other people's. But I imagine that all of us need to have our emotions shaped by scripture and shaped by God. And so God has given us the songbook of his people to express our prayers back to him through the Psalms. And so the Psalms speak to the truths of who God is that are all throughout the rest of scripture, but in a poem, in a song form, which we all know poems and songs are designed to elicit feeling in us. And so whether it's joy or contentment or envy, I mean, we have all sorts of feelings and the Psalms speak to all those things. And so I was trying to give myself and then hopefully others a guide for having God's word shape how we feel about life.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I'm thankful that you wrote the book, and I'm also thankful for your time today and sharing your story with me. This was really fun to get to talk.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks for joining me, Courtney.
Thank you.
Courtney's new book is called Teach Me to Feel, and it's a great devotional type resource to help you in whatever emotions come up throughout your day or week. Friends, have a great week and keep walking forward by faith.